Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our City Council meeting, March 12, 2012. We welcome you here and appreciate you being here. And if you'd like to speak on any of the agenda items, you certainly may do so as we go through the agenda. And if you will, try to keep your comments to 5 minutes, if you can, please, so that others can speak as well. We'll start our meeting here with the council prayer, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let us pray. Almighty and merciful Father, as we gather tonight to conduct the people's business, inspire us, guide us, help us to do that which is right and just and without personal gain. Keep us on the path of your will and the way that continues us to better our city. Amen.
Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions to the agenda this evening? If not, do we have a motion to approve?
I so move.
I'll second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion on the agenda? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item consideration of the minutes of February 27, 2012, the regular meeting minutes. Any discussion on the minutes? If not, do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
I'll second it. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. Under old business, appointments to boards and commissions or committees. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. You've recommended the reappointment of Peggy Penland to the Accommodations Tax Committee. Her term would expire March 25, 2014. You also recommended the reappointment of William Price to the Senior Commission. That term would expire March 14, 2014. Councilmember Diggs recommended the reappointment of Carmen Roa to the Community Development Committee. That term expires September 2, 2013. She also recommended the reappointment of Susan DeBrule to the Planning Commission. That term would expire December 1, 2013. And finally, she recommended the reappointment of Robert Aaron to the Recreation Commission. That term continues to September 1, 2013. Councilmember Ebner recommended the reappointment of Linda Basham to the Senior Commission with a term expiring March 14, 2014. So for council consideration tonight is the appointment of these individuals, Peggy Penland, William Price, Carmen Roa, Susan DeBrule, Robert Aaron, and Linda Basham to the respective committees, commissions, and boards.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor?
I'm approving everyone except William Price.
Oh.
Abstain from that.
You?
Okay. I'm abstaining from William.
Okay, passage unanimous. Anyway. Item 2, second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to annex property at 2006 Alpine Drive. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you. Melanie Driscoll, who's here tonight, owns 2.03 improved acres at 2006 Alpine Drive. In order to receive city services, she's asked to annex and have the property zoned residential RS-15. The ordinance is attached, and it's entitled an ordinance to annex to the corporate limits of the city of Aiken certain property consisting of 2.03 acres of land owned by Melanie Driscoll and located at 2006 Alpine Drive, and to zone the same residential single family RS-15. Planning Commission at their February 14th meeting unanimously approved annexing the property and zoning at RS 15. Their memo is in the materials we provided. Council unanimously approved this request at your first reading on February 27th. So for consideration tonight on second reading and public hearing is an ordinance annexing this 2.03 improved acres belonging to Ms. Driscoll and zoning at RS 15.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is second reading, public hearing. If anyone would like to speak on this issue, you certainly can do it now. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mayor, I approve second. Move to approve second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to annex property, at 2006 Alpine Drive.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor. Passes.
Welcome to the city.
Yep, welcome to the city.
Yes. Item 3, second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend concept plan for Colleton Park to allow an entrance sign on Pascalis Place right away. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance amending the concept plan for property located on the west side of Silver Bluff Road at Pascalis Place and owned by New Colony Partners, LLC. A temporary off-site sign had been approved for the subdivision in 2010. In order to locate a permanent sign off-site, council needs to grant a waiver from the requirements of the zoning ordinance in that section 4.4.51. You did approve this ordinance unanimously at the February 27, 2012 meeting. On page 54 of your materials that we sent out, there's actually an aerial photo that shows the proposed placement of the sign. The actual subdivision is some distance off of Silver Bluff Road, and you'll see an island in the middle of the entrance roadway, right at the entrance, but it's not on their property. It's actually in the right-of-way, and that's the proposed location of the sign. It was discussed in the original application, according to the developer, Philip Mary, but it was never formally approved. It is quite a distance off Silver Bluff Road. He is shared with us, and he's seeking permanent placement of that sign, and there is a rendition of the sign, and it's on page 56 of your material. So this is the second reading and public hearing of the ordinance to amend the concept plan to allow this permanent off-site subdivision entrance sign for Pascalis Place.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is second reading public hearing. If anyone would like to speak on this issue, you may do it. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve this entrance sign on Pascalis Place.
Pascalis.
On the right of way.
I second.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 4, second reading and public hearing of an ordinance for approval of the concept plan and rezoning of 2.07 acres located on Richland Avenue East at Gaston Road to planned institutional, PI. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance amending the zoning of real estate located on Gaston Road from limited professional to planned institutional and to approve a concept plan. Colleen Reed and Elliot Levy are here tonight. They've been instrumental in working on the preservation of the Gaston livery stable. And I think we all have an invitation to attend the passing of the key ceremony on Thursday, March 22nd at 5:30. They are asking that the track be changed from limited industrial to planned institutional. That request is based on their desire to create a living history museum, have a working pottery kiln, and demonstrate how the livery would have been used when it was built in 1896. Planning Commission approved the request. They did put some conditions that were at the discretion of our planning director. One was an evergreen buffer along the track southern boundary to be installed along this border with adjacent residential property, and that any dumpster used on the property be screened with evergreen shrubbery. In addition, they asked that the concept plan be amended in certain particulars at the first reading. One was that any undergrounding of electrical wiring be done if possible. because new wire is required to be underground, but they're actually asking for it to be done if possible. For City Council consideration, after unanimously adopting this at first reading on February 27th, is second reading in a public hearing for an ordinance rezoning this tract that belongs to the Friends of the Gaston Livery Stable to planned institutional.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance, and if anyone would like to speak about it, you may do so. Now it's back to City Council for consideration.
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
I second.
Okay, any discussion?
I'm not sure I understood what you said about the underground wiring.
New development, we do require underground wiring. They had asked that be amended, that wiring be undergrounded if possible.
So are we going to approve this with conditions that were set forth by the Planning Commission?
Those were the two. There were the two conditions that I read.
What it is there, the current wiring is overhead with a typical light pole and an outdoor light, and that has to be changed. So there is an existing installation until it's revised. Then it would have to go underground, and that's the intent. I'm not speaking out of turn, I don't think, Ms. Reed Emma. That's the intent, is to put it underground anyway.
How much does it cost, and what's if possible? Normally we go with something more firm than if possible.
I'll let Ms. Reed speak, but the intent is to put it underground, but she needs to say that versus me. I've been helping out. There's a reason I know this. So
normally you ask for all the figures and everything crossed.
Right now it's an existing overhead line that's energized, so it is turned on and the meter is flowing, so...
You can strike the if possible. We are going to do it. It's just a matter of when.
I haven't gotten that memo. So.
While Ms. Reed is there, can we call that a Gaston Road address? Is that, you brought that up in here, and I think that's not an issue using Gaston Road, is it?
No, I spoke with Larry Morris and Rachel Entremont, and they said, we have the address, we just have to pick the number.
Okay, very good, thank you.
Another question, Colleen, if you don't mind. I think you did tell me that this is owned by the committee, the board owns the property.
Friends of the Gaston Livery Stable.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments or questions?
I don't want anyone to panic. If you go out there to see the barn right now, the wood trim is pink. That is the primer.
Magenta. Was that Elliot's color that he wanted it
to be? He chose that, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we've got a motion and a second, so show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 5 is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend the concept plan for property at 1605 Silver Bluff Road, owned by the City of Aiken. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance amending the concept plan for property located at 1605 Silver Bluff Road, owned by the City of Aiken. This is our water treatment facility that we're in the process of constructing and getting approved by DHEC. There's a deep water well that is part of this development as well. There are two revisions to the plan that Council approved on January 25, 2010. One is the installation of two stormwater detention ponds instead of one, and the second was encroachment into the previously approved 50-foot wide undisturbed buffer. Planning Commission did unanimously approve the request on February 14 at their regular meeting, with conditions: one, that the development comply with the city submitted amended concept plan proposal and narrative; two, should council approve off-site planning of vegetative screening, that permission for this planning be provided by SCDOT and submitted to the planning department director for approval prior to installing it; three, any encroachments permitted by city council on the eastern and southern property lines be replanted with dense evergreen vegetation approved in advance by the planning department director and before any certificate of occupancy is issued. Council approved this unanimously at your meeting on February 27th, and for tonight, for your consideration, is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance.
Thanks, sir. This is a second reading and public hearing, and if anyone would like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mayor, I make a motion that we approve the ordinance to amend the concept plan for property at 1605 Silver Bluff Road that's owned by the City of Aiken.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. Passage unanimously. The new business, first item, first reading of an ordinance to amend the City Code, Section 2-281, regarding the city solicitor. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance to amend Section 2-281 and related sections of the Aiken City Code regarding the Aiken City Solicitor. As we put in the memo to council, with Ben Moore's resignation the end of January, the city attorney and city staff reviewed our city code section regarding the legal department. The city solicitor is a full-time employee and is set forth in the budget that way. It's been that way for quite a long time. And with the actual operation and then the city code provisions, Mr. Smith generated some proposed amendments to the city code to actually bring it in line with our practice, where the city solicitor reports to the city manager. So for council consideration on first reading is the ordinance to amend the code in the particulars as contained in the attachment you find on page 95 of your agenda packet.
Okay, do we have a motion? Second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
We have a second. Okay, any discussion?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, go ahead.
On page 95, and I'll start with the easy question first, it's under 2-281, item C.
Yes.
The first line, last paragraph, says a contract. Mm-hmm. Now, it is since we've got some discussions whether that's a city employee contract or a 1099 contract, maybe I need to say W-2 or 1099. Does right. that need to be specified here, or is that the city manager's pleasure there?
It would be in the discretion of the city manager as it's currently drafted, Mr. Ebner. Of course, in the budget, you have listed a full-time position called the city solicitor. So that's the protected. It is an employee, and for folks that are selected for that position, it's subject to city council appointment. But we do require them to fill out all of the paperwork necessary for someone to become a city employee.
Okay, but we, but it can, and for the city attorney, that would be a 1099 type contract.
That's the way we've treated it in the past.
And I would think that would be appropriate, but you know, it's part time. Do we need to say anything about that, or do we have other administrative rules that require us to be sure it's a W-2 or 1099?
Regarding the city solicitor, it's very clear that that's a W-2 because it's a listed full-time position okay. in the budget. That's how you've protected that.
And then
the city attorney is actually in that section for the legal services department, and that's under legal. You'll see that
okay.
line item
I'm,
legal
I'm not, yes,
development.
Sir. And then the city attorney serves at the pleasure of the council, right?
That is correct.
Okay. And then is this addressing the city solicitor, or that's a different? I mean, the assistant city solicitor, is that a different?
It does not. It just talks about the city solicitor.
We're going to deal with that a little bit later on. Right?
That's correct.
And then under item A, it'll be the second sentence. The city council, and scratched out, is in its discretion with the advice and then in new words, with the advice and consent of the city manager, may appoint one person mm-hmm. to serve as city attorney, city solicitor. Mm-hmm. And in the event of such appointment, it shall be considered one position or office.
Yeah, that's if it were a combined position. We did that years ago when Jim Holly worked for the city. It proved to be unsustainable because of the court docket in the city solicitor's office.
But this implies that the mm-hmm. city attorney mm-hmm. is at the pleasure of the city manager.
I guess
we need the city manager to help us hire a city attorney and the contracts and all of that.
Right.
But this implies that he serves at the discretion and pleasure of the city manager, and I want to be sure that's clarified for me. And Gary, maybe you can help me. You wrote this, so.
Now, only the city solicitors at the discretion of the city manager. The city attorney, that second sentence talks about if you had someone who served both as city attorney and city solicitor.
You would have to decide to do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And most people probably would not recommend that you do that.
Right.
So the first sentence then, the first and second sentence are two different issues.
That is correct.
I wanted to be sure that we weren't, I'm not a lawyer, obviously.
The code retains the flexibility to allow you to decide, you know, we could probably get by with just one guy, and he could do all of the city's legal work. It allows you that flexibility, but the first sentence makes it clear, council gets to decide who your city attorney is going to be.
Okay.
That's your, you know, those are the two jobs you pick are me and Richard.
Right. When I read that, you got to, my background is a little different.
Right.
Thank you.
The only question I have is the city solicitor is an employee of the city, treated like all other employees of the city, benefits, protections, and so forth. Are you satisfied that that concept is clear in this?
I am, because the separate document that backs up the city code section is the annual city budget. And, you know, when we went through on zero-based budgeting, it shows those positions with the city, whether they're full-time, part-time, and it is shown as a full-time position in the city budget.
But does the contract that you would have with the city solicitor, would you would have a contract with the city solicitor or not? You don't really need one.
The way it's currently drafted, it does. The way it's currently written, it does require a contract for the city solicitor.
And that contract would stipulate that the city would provide the legal protections and indemnifications and so forth for the city solicitor.
They would have all the rights of a regular city employee.
Yeah, that's the point I want to make.
The question I have is how many city employees have employment contracts?
Well, the city manager used to have a contract. You don't have a contract with the city manager right now.
But that's an oversight on our part.
Right? I think probably when I drafted that clause, I was envisioning the possibility of hiring a part-time city solicitor, and you may decide you want to do that on a contractual basis or an employment basis. Okay. We wanted to make sure that if we did that, that the contract would spell out what the requirements were for that contractual employee. I would envision this to be a flexible paragraph. If it was a full-time employee, the budget's going to spell out what the requirements are for that particular employee. But if you decided to hire a contract, you know, if the new solicitor were to have a conflict of interest and was not able to represent the city on a particular issue, and that can happen, it's happened before.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so you may find yourself in a position where you need to contract out a particular case to a lawyer. This would make it clear that lawyer's got to come to you and show you the proof of the insurance that they have and that sort of thing.
So this is an either-or type situation.
Yes.
They would either be an employee or be a contract.
Yes.
So it would not be both. It would not be an employee of the city with a contract.
It might be helpful instead of shall if you change that to may. That might give us a little more flexibility if that's the concern of council.
Which one?
That's in paragraph C.
Getting back to Steve's question, he asked the question, how many of our employees are contractual?
City employees? I'm not aware of any contracts at the current time. In the past, you had a contract with the city manager.
We should have a contract with you, right?
That's up to council to decide.
Okay.
Some city managers insist on it. Richard did not.
Okay. Which may, are you talking about the first line?
The first line of paragraph
line.
C.
Right. So shall, if that was may, that would give the flexibility I think I'm hearing council would like.
Okay. Anything else?
I'm just wondering whether we want, this is the first reading of this, is that right?
It is.
I'm thinking about our executive session. We probably will want to include some things at the next reading once our discussion takes place on that.
You'd have that flexibility.
Okay.
One last question. Go to the page 96, the last line under 2-286. City solicitor shall prosecute and represent the city in all civil and related proceedings in municipal court. Does that imply civil proceedings?
No, it says criminal.
Criminal.
It says criminal.
Just, he's criminal only?
Yes, sir.
No civil?
No.
Yeah, but the municipal court is a court of limited jurisdiction. It only has criminal jurisdiction.
Very good.
Just sort of an unrelated issue, but this seems as though this change could have been made a long time ago.
Oh, no doubt.
In practice, this change was made a long time ago.
Right.
We're making the code conform to what the practice has been.
Okay, let me rephrase it. It seems to me that the code could have been changed a long time ago, and I guess my question is, do we have other provisions of our code, or is there anyone on the staff responsible for a periodic review of the code to make sure that if there are changes that are necessitated, that we'll get a chance to do it, to make the changes?
Yes, and Mr. Smith and I have that conversation on a fairly regular basis.
Okay.
Richard and I actually, when he was city solicitor, we revised this code with the company that prepares the document for us, and Sarah was deeply involved in that.
Yeah.
And that was, what, 10 years ago?
That's quite a while.
It's been a while.
It's been a while since we did that.
But yeah. It's as you modify it, most of the time, you know, we find these things as something comes up.
I'd rather be proactive than reactive.
Right.
But we do get suggestions from the code company that, you know, you've got a new change in the law and you might want to consider about making this modification.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Any others? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes united. Unanimous. And two, resolution appointing city solicitor. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. It is a resolution entitled, a resolution appointing Paige E. Tiffany, City Court Solicitor. As we stated before, Ben Moore did resign effective January 27, 2012. We advertised this vacancy as we do for all city employee positions. We received about a dozen applications and interviewed four top candidates. And we had several staff members involved in the selection process. And I have to say that Mrs. Tiffany distinguished herself in the interview process. She has a wealth of experience that translates very well to this position. And we look forward to working with her. Everyone who participated in the interview process was quite impressed by her energy and focus towards problem solving, and appeared to bring good skills to the job, too. So with that, I'd recommend to City Council that you appoint her the next city solicitor. That would be subject to the code revisions that we have discussed here tonight.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Mr. Mayor, it gives me pleasure to recommend us approving the resolution hiring Paige Tiffany, or appointing Paige Tiffany as our city solicitor.
Okay. I second.
We have a second also. Okay, comments?
Her husband is with her here tonight.
Right. Oh, she's here.
Okay, any discussion?
I just have a question regarding our court system. What do we do when there are Hispanics that do not speak English in our court? Do we have a translator sitting?
The Supreme Court has identified a list of certified interpreters.
Mm-hmm.
We have had other interpreters available through the Solicitor's Office of the Sheriff's Department who have come in and helped.
Okay. So what do? Review the docket before the hearings and have someone lined up to translate?
I think typically the chief could speak to it possibly, although he's new on the job. My experience has been that
I'll tell you what happens, that if they show up for court and they can't speak English, the judge continues it until the next term of court when they can get a translator.
That's always the way.
That does happen.
And there are folks on call, too, that actually come to the courtroom, and it's interesting how they really don't speak any English until the interpreter shows up, and then it turns out they really do speak English.
They don't speak your English, Richard.
Hungarian, let me know.
Oh, very good. That's great, Steve.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Congratulations.
Welcome to the city.
Congratulations. Okay, item three. Approval of a mutual aid agreements by Aiken Department of Public Safety with various law enforcement agencies. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. Council recalled our last meeting on February 27th that you approved a mutual aid agreement with the Sheriff's Department we wanted to get that done so that could get processed through Aiken County Council on a timely basis. Of course, it was time, based on the sheriff's office request, to also review our entire file of mutual aid agreements. We do have a new mutual aid agreement, and that's with Orangeburg County Sheriff's Office. That was the last contiguous county to Aiken County that we had not previously had a mutual aid agreement. With the train wreck in Graniteville, with our recent tragedies in December and January, this mutual aid agreement just provides an appropriate mechanism under state law for us to call upon other agencies to assist. And, in fact, we had a mutual effort this morning that started at the river and came through Aiken today that has proved very beneficial in serving some pending warrants. In addition to the Aiken County Sheriff's Office and Orangeburg, we have Barnwell County, Edgefield County, Lexington County, Saluda County, Town of Burnettown, Town of Jackson, Town of New Ellington, City of North Augusta, and the University of South Carolina Aiken Police Department. So we are seeking approval for entering into mutual aid agreements with these law enforcement agencies.
Okay, very good. Do we have a motion and a second?
Move for our approval, Mr. Mayor. This has come in, helped us in so many ways over the past and will help us in the future.
A second.
Second, okay. Any discussion?
Yeah, I have two questions. One relates to funding. I know that in Graniteville there was a lot of federal funding that, mm-hmm. that covered the cost of local law enforcement agencies, but if that were not the case, I don't know what the specifics were of the incident that you happened this morning, but is this generally any funding associated necessarily with these mutual fund?
It just depends on the nature of the operation. In like a Graniteville train wreck, there are federal funds since it's a disaster. Yeah. So those funds and the federal agencies come in on a share basis, and it just depends on what we undertake. You know, so many times crime doesn't understand city limits.
Sure.
You know, they just occur. So it's just an opportunity for us to use existing resources in a combined effort.
And do we budget? Is there any item in the budget for mutual aid support?
We have not, because it's just included in the general funds that you appropriate every year.
And finally, does mutual aid, as we well know, we live in a city with donut holes. Does mutual aid apply to people in the county that call 911 and now, very limited county resources might not be available and ours would be?
Well, and again, we would have to get a request from the Sheriff's Department to assist them. And that's what we did in the events in December and January. We actually requested that assistance. So it's on a request basis. So for somebody who unfortunately finds themselves in a donut hole, they do need to call the Sheriff's Office for that response. It would be the agencies that request help from one another.
So if the sheriff's office realized that they could not respond as they wanted to, they would call public safety?
They certainly could do that.
Does that happen, and does it happen often?
I could get you some numbers off the top of my head. I'm sure it's on a fairly regular basis, but it's typically an organized operation versus a routine thing. It's a response. As opposed to something that's done on a routine basis. We get those figures for you.
I'd like to.
Sure.
Without a lot of effort, I'd like to see it. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I've got a quick question on this. What is the relationship with SLED and the Aiken? I mean, how does SLED tie in with the various counties and so forth? Or what is the relationship between county and state, city and state? I mean, what determines if it goes to SLED, or what determines if we do it locally, or what is the catalyst that brings SLED in is what I'm kind of curious.
And again, it would depend, Councilmember Homoki, on the nature of the crime that's occurring. You know, Mark Keel has been tremendously supportive to the city, and his staff has been abundantly helpful when we have to call on them twice now. It just depends. Of course, they have a lab. They do have a backlog. The sheriff now has a lab. As far as the nature of the crime, whether it's a felony, whether it's a murder, whether it's a drug operation, it's just kind of on a case-by-case basis of whether SLED is involved or not.
Is there a formal document, quote-unquote, contract between us and SLED? Or
I think it's in
state legislation.
I think it's in legislation and the charter for SLED that there exists for a reason to assist law enforcement in the state. And it just depends on the nature of the incident. You know, it just depends on what occurs, whether or not public safety can investigate that or whether SLED has to be called in. For example, if a police officer vehicle is involved in a wreck, by state statute, you know, the highway patrol investigates the wreck. We do not. So it's just case by case in the nature of the particular incident.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 4, the underground easement to SCENG. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. We do have an ordinance authorizing the City of Aiken to grant an easement to South Carolina Electric and Gas Company. That's the title of the ordinance. In the 1 cent sales tax, we have approximately $1.4 million committed towards underground. It's called non-traditional service or undergrounding of electrical service in the City of Aiken. The franchise agreement that you approved several years ago, under that agreement, South Carolina Electric and Gas sets aside money to match our money for undergrounding. We believe we have an opportunity to finish undergrounding the overhead wires on Newberry Street at the Festival Center, and we have a site for the necessary transformer here adjacent to City Hall, and that is in the materials attached. Mr. Morris had a good, we think, productive discussion with the folks from SCENG and SCANA as far as using this money and actually finishing out some of the undergrounding that we've begun here in the downtown area. The B lane between the alley and Richland Avenue is an example of the most recent undergrounding that we've done. And, of course, the result is an area of the city that's used much more frequently than in the past. So that we, of course, for them to commence the undergrounding project, they'll need an easement to hook into that transformer, and the paperwork is attached to the memo and ordinance that I've provided. So for consideration on first reading is authority to grant SCENG the easement that's described in the attached paperwork.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
Second.
And Gail?
Move.
So make the motion.
Okay.
Ms. Price, second.
Okay, sure.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Is it in the intent that this underground wiring only take place downtown, or can it take place elsewhere in the city? Or I don't know the mechanics of the second round capital sales project.
We could pull the minutes on that. As I recall the discussion, the immediate area was the downtown area, and we specifically discussed the festival area.
Are there other areas there's obviously money left over. Are there other areas that you would think
there,
of?
There are other areas, and that's the discussion we've had with SCENG.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor.
I do have a question.
Go ahead.
Please. On page 142, that's the map. City manager and I have had some discussions about that. He calls it a metal building on here, and I call it a falling down building. Obviously, assuming this is the landline, it goes through the middle of it, so we have no problem taking the shed down with the landowner, or has that bridge been crossed?
Oh, you say on page 118.
118.
Give me, oh, it's 142. I'm sorry. Page 118 and 142. And we're going to take the whole thing down, and we got to put a false wall. I'm curious because it's kind of a collector of windblown trash. I'll be nice and say that.
Before we would let SCENG commence work, we'll have a discussion with the landowner to clarify that.
See if we can. And that is the landline. On the left is a different owner, and on the right is the city. Is that correct? And that would be good to clean up the fence line and the landline all at the same time with that.
Oh, absolutely.
And before the next reading, I'll arrange a time. There's some stray lines that are still over B Lane and some other places, and I want to be sure that we can get those. So I'll arrange a time, and we can walk that area.
That'll be fine. We'll have Mr. Morris go with us.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, if I could, please.
Yeah.
In this first reading, they're saying that SCENG would be placing a transformer box apparently in the parking area where our public safety officers currently park, behind the building and around the side. Mr. Morris, do you know where they may be placing that? And my concern is there, after having replaced two HVAC units that was beside that building in that parking lot, the third one went up on the roof. But people park in there over the weekends on weekend nights. Mm-hmm. And my concern is them trying to back out or turn around in that tight area and possibly hitting that transformer box.
The transformer would actually go adjacent to the transformer that serves this building. Right behind the building, there's a wooden fence, and the primary power for this transformer would come out of that transformer into this one. So it would be tucked up in that corner where folks would not have a problem backing around or hitting it or anything like that. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, Larry. Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor. Passes unanimously. Item 5, pension committee membership. Mr. Pierce, please.
Camp, we do have a resolution. It's entitled a resolution appointing Stuart Biedenbow and Alicia Davis to the City of Aiken Pension Committee. We had an extensive review last spring about the city pension plan. In the past, we've had, right now you've got three members. We've had as many as four in the past. Of course, with any kind of committee or pension committee or board or commission, typically you have an odd number of members. Based on the discussions we had in this room and our review of the pension plan, it appears appropriate to have the assistant city manager, who acts in my absence anyway, serving on this pension committee so he can be up to speed about its operations. And then Alicia Davis has served us very ably and, in fact, has finished her first year as your Human Resources Department Director and did so last month. And, of course, she is in constant contact with many members of staff, and we wanted to have her up to speed on the pension committee operation as well. So we wanted to get back to a full complement of membership on the pension committee, and adding Stuart Biedenbow and Alicia Davis will help us do that. So that's for consideration tonight, to name them to the pension committee.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
I make a motion that we approve the resolution appointing Stuart Biedenbow and Alicia Davis to the City of Aiken Pension Committee.
Okay, second it. I'll second it. Any discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I, as you know, I've expressed concerns over since I've been on council about our pension system. I was surprised to find when we had our pension review that three members of staff formed the pension committee, and there was no responsibilities for the council. My opinion is that the pension committee should have at least one or two members of the council on it. I can't think of any function that is as important, if not more important, than our city pension system. We know from last year's budget that we have had a significant increase in retirement benefits. We know that our pension administrator assures us that we're adequately funded. While I understand what he says, I'm still not comfortable. Let me phrase it that way. In a conversation I had, and I'm sure he would allow me to quote him, with Senator Ryberg, it's clear that the state's going to be sending some of their liability down to us. They can only do that for our public safety portion.
That's right. They can't
do it for our portion. But I guess in a nutshell, I kind of think the council ought to be a lot more involved in the pension committee than simply appointing three staff members. They have decisions to make that affect the finances of the pension system. So I would prefer that council get more involved and be represented on the pension committee.
I think it's a very good suggestion. Is there any reason why that wouldn't be allowed by policy or anything like that, state or?
We've just never done that in the past. The gatekeeping that goes on, of course, is the annual contribution to the plan that we do as part of the budget process. Council does have oversight. Your city manager is a member of the committee. I do report to council And, you know, we've done our best, and we had a full discussion in here and full information that we provided to council about your pension plan. Really, the plan attorney is of the opinion that once the money is put in the plan, that is a trust for the participants in the plan. So, you know, there are several safeguards there. It's just never been done before, and of course, this is something that's primarily a benefit for staff and is seen as part of the employment with the city and a trust for the employees. Typically, council has looked to the city manager to make sure that this plan was run accordingly.
As the changes have been made over time to the plan, those were so the city manager, whoever it was in the last umpteen years, presented that to council, then council approves the changes.
Yes, that is correct, and that's the way the system is set up.
I guess the concern is, in reading what's in the newspaper, and then some of the other major corporations are seeing with the low interest rates going on for so long and a couple more years, some of these plans are getting depleted, or not depleted, but they're not building. You know, they're struggling to keep this 7.5% and 8% that the state says they get, and the fella here. So I guess the concern is, are we watching the money close enough there to see that we don't get in trouble because we are independent? That would be one question.
Right.
And then the other part, for all of the politicians to be discussing the issues with Social Security and pension plans and raising from 6% to 7%, that's a tax that would be raised in election year. That means there's something, a brew somewhere that we're in trouble money or something. And I guess I'm really I'm not concerned, but I want to be sure that our plan is in good hands.
Well, our plan has consistently outperformed other plans, has consistently had returns that others have not. I think the most recent return was 3.3%, but again, this is a long-term plan, decades and decades, not something that's day traded or, just on an annual basis. The annual basis contribution is actuarially based, and the life of the plan, we are meeting the actuarial targets fairly close to what we need. The plan is liquid. We do have the money on hand to meet our current obligations, and we're going to have money on hand to meet future obligations.
Well, can we make changes to the plan? We make additions to it. Can we make deletions to it? Or can we, the state's going to go from 6% to 7%
contribution
of the pension, which we pay by the city. How can we make changes to future employees, or can we make changes to the past? Because obviously money is getting tight.
Well, again, you don't have a contribution plan. We have a defined benefit plan. The city contributes 100% to it.
Understand that.
Right. So you're talking about the 6%. That's the employee's contribution at the state level. What we do is we keep a governor on the salary, and we factor into the salary the fact that we are putting money in to the plan on behalf of the employee. Changes to the plan, modifications to the plan would take a vote of council, and we'd have to draft those.
Can we do that?
You are asking a question of me that probably goes a little bit above my pay level. And really, you would have to rely on someone who specializes in the benefits arena, employee benefits arena. The lawyer for the defined benefit plan is going to be able to answer that question for you better than I can.
Yeah. And again,
but I mean, certainly we're all aware of people who are employees who are involved in a benefit situation, and the old guys have this plan and the new guys have this plan. But to actually put that into process, if that's something council wants to consider, I think you've got to talk to a lawyer that specializes in that kind of law.
And again, that is a discussion we had last spring when we had Warner Anthony down from Greensboro, and we covered that in great detail.
Yeah.
And then we were satisfied at the end that the way the plan was set up was we could continue to go. We are not like the state. We do not have financial problems. We just don't. You've got a funded plan.
Well, I guess the concern is obviously, how can I say this positively? A lot of us are on pensions, and they keep getting cut back, and because they're corporate pensions.
I understand.
Or they're federal pensions.
Right.
And they seem to be able to cut them back. And And especially with new employees, most new employees at the corporate level have nothing anymore, not a defined plan, I should say, or that. And I'm just wondering if we're financially sound as we, you know, we've got a number of employees that retire each year and we hire. Do we need to look at the future and be sure it doesn't become an overbearing part of the budget? And I guess that's where I'm headed long term. Is it, if it's 3%, and I don't know a number, it's X percent now, but we don't want it to be X plus Y in 10 years.
And again, it's all good questions, Mr. Ebner, and we do have the plan attorney looking at that. Obviously, this is something that pension plans across the country are looking at. We just have what we think is a dynamic team assembled between the plan attorney, the actual financial advisor that advises for the investments, and then the investment counselor that actually makes the investments. You've got a full plan document that we provided to council, and there are safeguards in place, and certainly we've had a discussion with the plan attorney with the changing landscape of what we need to be doing to make sure that we have a plan that's relevant in the current environment. And they are, you know, working on any recommended changes that would need to be made to the plan to keep it current and keep it liquid.
When would we be reviewing this again in council?
You certainly will have the contribution of the pension plan as part of the budget, Mayor, and to the extent that the plan attorney makes any recommended changes regarding our funding obligations in the future, we would bring that to council for consideration.
If we had any questions, we could certainly get that person here.
I've got three quick points. First of all, what is the function of the pension committee? The second is, why do we specifically name the individuals by name if we're going to associate the position they hold in the city with membership on the committee? I think it should be just whoever is the incumbent in that position should be also on the committee. And the third one is for Mr. DeWar. No matter what the committee comes up with before they enact anything, they have to come to council. And
that's
where we get our that's where we get our input from there.
That's exactly right. And again, we just have never done that. It's been more based on individuals, just as you do with your other committees, boards, and commissions. We've done an individual appointment historically.
Well, we've never done it because we're the only city in the state, I'm told, that
I think.
Are there two?
Anderson?
No, Hilton Head.
Hilton Head?
Anderson. They're actually more than us.
And not is your pension
more,
committee
though.
Comprised
not
of?
Hmm? Not many more.
Yeah, I mean, there's a handful, but again, the city made the right decisions, you know, 17 years ago, not to participate in the state plan.
I understand that, and I hope you can appreciate where the questions are coming from. I want to make absolutely sure that our employees have the pension that we're promising them.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, say what you will. I'm not a mathematician, and I read the Wall Street Journal every day, and I get worried about what I read about the pensions. And here we are in this city where we say the employees pay nothing. The state is saying they're going to go from 6% to 7%, and we're going to... Our costs have got to increase as much as everybody else's costs increase. And I hope Mr. Anthony will come down on our budget session and maybe I learn something every time he comes down, and I learn something every year, as I do every year we look at the audit. I think by the time my political career is over, I'll be an expert on the audit and on the pension system, but it won't do the city any good.
But it is a good point because it is in the annual audit as well.
Yes, so, I mean, that's my concern, quite frankly, because we have senior staff that are going to be retiring. Our staff is aging. Mm-hmm. And as they retire, that makes a demand on the system. And it's one thing when you put payments in and it's against future payments, but all of a sudden, you know, when you've got a lot of senior members of staff that are collecting pensions, you know, how much of what we pay this year is going to cover their costs, and that gets closer to the 100%. So
well, that's why we use an actuarial firm. I mean, they run all those calculations for us. That's what we do every year and have done for many years, just to make sure it's a very carefully thought-out process. It served us very well, and, you know, our advisors are confident that we can continue this path and continue to do very well.
They need to reassure members of the council, at least this member of the council, every
and
year.
And that's fine. We will have an opportunity to bring them to you to have an update.
Okay.
I think we all have that concern. I certainly do,
yes.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every paper, anytime you want to pick up a paper, you can see something about pensions and problems.
I'd like to know whether they think the pension committee should have a member of council on it. If you could ask them, Richard, I appreciate it.
Oh, sure.
And if we could make sure that Mr. Anthony comes at appropriate time during the budget,
I think that
would make us all feel maybe a little bit better.
We're glad to bring whomever council would care to hear from.
Tell him to bring his calculator. To approve the.
We've already got it.
Is there any other discussion?
Well, are we going to change it to positions or a by name appointment?
I would prefer to have it by named appointment because that's how we do all our other committees.
We need by name.
Well,
I think the reason I say by name is because if you put position there and the position changes, it might not be the appropriate person 10 years from now. So by name gives the council the ability to review the name versus position. That's my thoughts.
But I do agree with Councilman Hamoki on I'd like to see a document on their responsibilities.
Yes,
we may already have it, but if we don't, I'd like to.
We do. Yeah, it's part of the plan.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. We've got a motion and a second. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay, fine. Okay, we need to go into executive session for a personnel matter if council elects to do so. Okay, we have a motion and a second.
My understanding, Mayor, is that's for the city court operation.
Yeah.
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay. Very good. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Pass this one. Council has just returned out of executive session where we talked about the personnel matter, and we will accept a motion and a second to come out of session.
So move.
Okay, so move. All hands, let's see, all approve? Unanimously approved to come out of session.
She was the best, but my kids love her. She's like,